Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Fridays are split between Crawling Into the Darks with Pam and Break On Through. Join Aphasiana and Babble on Saturday as they teach you the fine art of being part sinner, part saint. And then Mondays are split between The Hearts of L&P with Victoria and Turning a New Page with Those Black Lace Diaries with Mr. M and Mistress Frost. These shows are designed student color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions, tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Good evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. How's it going?
All right.
Awesome sauce. And we got a great board of poetry tonight, inspired by a variety of quotes about midnight. So I'm definitely looking forward to reading poetry, hanging out with you, hopefully some other cool poets. And, you know, life is good.
Absolutely.
And I made mocha brownies today. Like, I made the regular cocoa fudge brownies that you make with the cocoa powder, and I had this condensed, you put it in milk or almond milk or ice water. It's like a coffee syrup that's condensed to flavor your iced coffee, or to make iced coffee, and I put a couple squirts of that in, and it was so dang good.
Okay.
In case you were wondering what was cooking.
Well, if you can do that, you could do Frangelica or Bailey's.
There you go. There you go. That'd be good. What is that one cheesecake you always make, the Kahlua one or something like that?
No, that's the Bailey's cheesecake.
Bailey's, yes. I keep meaning to want to try that. Plus, it never hurts to have a bottle of Bailey's Irish cream around the house. Part of it for making cheesecake.
Or if you can't afford the Bailey's, go for St. Brendan's. It's good, too.
Good point. All right. And don't feed the mogwai. And they'll turn into gremlins. I like that. That's what Mamiel says on the board.
Mogwai.
And, yeah. So, shall we go ahead and get this party started?
Yes.
All right. Well, up first, we have I Just Want to Sleep by Darkened Auras. And let's see here. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
I Just Want to Sleep by Darkened Auras. And up pop, her prompt, or the prompt. At midnight, she whispered to her brain, please let me sleep tonight. When she was a kid, imagination would play. When she was tucked in at the end of the day. When she was a teen, hormones took a turn at conjuring images and watching her burn. Now as an adult, with so much to juggle, getting decent sleep is still such a struggle. She looks at the digital face showing time. She just wants to sleep. That isn't a crime. 12 o'clock midnight, the red numbers red. Each night is the same. She doesn't succeed. One night in tears after a breakup, she drowned down sleeping pills so she'd never wake up. She whispered to her brain, I just want to sleep. of blackness around her. Oh, it's a creep. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. Well, let's see. She wrote to the quote, "At midnight, she whispered to her brain, 'Please let me sleep tonight.'" Well, as always, I know I always say this, but it's so true. Darkened Auras has just impeccable rhyme, you know, and meter. And, you know, I like how there's so many relatable details to this, you know, like how the brain starts to, like, really get messed up to the point when you can't sleep, when you have that breakdown, you know, when something, oftentimes when something difficult happens in your life, like, for example, near the end, 1 night 2 years after breakup, she downed sleeping pills so she'd never wake up. And oftentimes they say, like, what is it, going 24 hours or some amount of time without sleep is like, you know, having so many drinks. It really messes with the head. I also thought it was really interesting that she brought in the digital clock with the light, because they say if you have trouble sleeping, one of the things you need to do is turn the digital clock away from you so you can't see it. But I think so many people just like the familiarity of being able to look at, to look at the clock and don't think about turning it away. So I like that. 12 o'clock midnight, the red number's red. Each night is the same. She doesn't succeed. I also liked how this, you know, progressed from a child to a teen. You know, so that it became obvious that from a young age that, you know, those thing issues, sleeping problems had been a lifetime issue. So really just a wonderful emotive write and very well done.
Thank you very much. Well, that digital clock is a superficial nightlight illuminating the fact that you can't sleep. Just a reminder. I just will put it under the bed so you can't see it. Anyway. Yes, actually walks two ways. This sits on the thought of that lifetime of probably anxiety, the imagination, then the hormones, then the adulthood. So nothing has tempered itself out over the years. The brain's still going a million miles an hour. But we read the AN. Bottom half of this actually walks a little darker in its detailed note of what actually happened. So,
yeah, I noticed that. I did read the AN.
That thought with the she whispered to her brain, "I just want to sleep," as black stratus started to creep. It walks well with that the prompt she took, but also as a note to something that once happened, and at least being there in the interim to make sure it wasn't a
absolutely
a negative act.
Yeah. When I saw that AN, I definitely could relate to that because I've been in similar situations. So definitely. As Mamia said, it took in late night poems, it turned so dark so fast. But that's, I think, something that a lot of people who go through depression, anxiety, and sleep issues do end up dealing with is that point where you just have trouble finding an answer, you know, and it does turn dark. So, yeah, great comment there, Rex.
All right. Where would she go? Where do we go next?
All right. Up next we have Midnight Ritual by Forgotten Dream. And it goes like this. My body is a hardcover book. Stiff exterior filled with volumes, leaned upright on lumpy pillows, tangled in silky model sheets. Nighttime blooms like a bruise, indigo denim seeping across the walls, the color of silent hours of gentle snores. But my eyes blink awake, plagued by shadows taking his silhouette and the sprinklers that whisper his name. Night after night, I lay still, spectral fingers caressing behind ear, drifting over statuesque face, chapping trembling lips. A cold ache settles in my chest, like an ice cube, chilling blood and freezing sobs midway up my tightening throat. I swallow the lump of thorns, eyelids squeezing shut as warm teardrops leak like an exorcism. He dissolves as skies lighten. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I like this. This is nicely voiced. My body is a hardcover book. Nighttime blooms like a bruise. Indigo denim seeping across the walls. Plagued by shadows taking his silhouette and the sprinklers that whisper his name. This is a little on the creepy side, but it's done. That first half almost walks as a note to sensuality, but finishes off with the thoughts that plague the tightening throat. The swallow, I swallow a lump of thorns, eyelids squeezing shut. There's fear on the back end of this, but the upper half is almost sensual in its reading and its effortless thought. And it kind of hits on that notion of not just the monster, because that's what she took. The monster showed up just after midnight, as they do. So it walks that way. It also walks in the thought of the loss of someone. And that's the monster that kind of grips and each night as one walk the evening through, missing that which you had up there, the silky modal sheets, the thought of taking his silhouette, spectral fingers caressing behind my ear, the statuesque face. So it hits on the note of loss. What about you?
Yeah, I really like this too. I have to say that I have to agree with you. It does at first start out, it does have that sensual tone to it. And I do think that sensuality and sadness work well together, or it can if a person balances them out correctly. And even the opening line, my body is a hardcover book, you know, you just get the idea of someone being willing to be opened up and be vulnerable, you know, and the mention of the tangled sheets and even the spectral caresses, you know, it has a spectral fingers caressing behind ears, drifting over statuesque face, chapping trembling lips. It has a sensuality to it, although at that point you begin to see the sadness. I also like how Forgotten Dreams is really good at paying attention to adding little details in, like plagued by the shadows taking his silhouette and the sprinklers that whisper his name. Like you could just imagine the sprinklers running at nighttime and that sound that just constantly reminds you and of any sound that just constantly reminds you. And I like here that she went, went in a non-traditional way of a monster. Like it wasn't, you know, the vampire or werewolf or, you know, a demon, which, you know, are all great stories. I love dark stories with supernatural and mythological. But that the monster was that loss of somebody. And oftentimes when there is somebody you lose, it is that middle of the night, you know, the midnight or later when you're laying there alone that you just think about them the most. And then when there's the distractions of daytime, that's when they disappear. And I like how she describes that disappearance as like an exorcism. He dissolves as skies lighten. So just a beautiful write and very well done.
Where are we going next?
All right. Up next, we have... We have Midnight Moments by Adrian 41062. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Midnight Moments by Adrian 41062. The closer we get to midnight, the quieter the world becomes. Walking through darkened streets, the lamppost lights just hum. Clouds clear to clearer skies, where stars that fade still shine. Those ghost stars that died eons ago, with moonlight they entwine. The hour I sit and smoke in peace, and quietness like no other hour, jasmine scents drift across the garden with amazing power. Midnight only the odd house alight, cats stealthily move in shadows dark, till the security light comes alive, a satellite in the sky, leaving its mark. Every night nature's painted skies give me so much peace and joy. It's good to lose yourself with serenity, with no pressure or stress, you get joy. And poem. A nice
great read,
midnight.
Rex. What's that?
It's a nice turn at midnight.
Absolutely. All right. Well, yeah, this is, I really like this one. It's beautiful. I like that he describes the gentler side, the peaceful side, the beautiful side of midnight, of nighttime. And I really like this all the way through, but I especially like the line, those ghost stars that died eons ago with moonlight, they entwine. And the next whole stanza after that, the hour I sit and smoke in peace and quietness like no other hour, jasmine scent drifts across the garden with amazing power. You know, I love when in poetry people use not only imagery, which he does really well here, but provides us with a sense of movement, a sense of sound. Like you could just imagine someone, you know, putting the cigarette to their mouth and pulling it out, and you can imagine them just, you know, lifting their face up to the air to smell the jasmine. I think that's beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. It's a quiet moment, midnight moments. Nothing really good happens after midnight or 2 a.m., as the saying goes, but if you're not running around loose, you can sit outside and enjoy those after midnight moments. That jasmine wafting on the air is a nice touch. It's got such a nice aromatic appeal, kind of a little pungent, spicy. Then you get to hear all the other things, the crickets, the owls, and there's a nice sense of peace because there is nothing in those moments that actually pertains to the pressure or stress that you feel during the waking end of things, because that's where most people spend time working, and that's where all the pressure comes. So go sit outside after midnight. Enjoy it before the heat comes in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. Yeah, it was funny because we actually, for the contest, I chose that quote, nothing good ever happens after midnight. But there was also the quote, let's face it, all the good stuff happens after midnight. Although that was the quote by a quote from the guy who created The Simpsons. So, you know, goodness only knows what he's doing after midnight. And then there was another one that says something along the line of, you know, you never know what'll happen. Oh, anything is possible after midnight. So there was like different points of views.
There
are right.
Shadows I fall from the depths of my pit, and I give you fire.
Is that a quote or something you made up off the top of your head?
just something that came occurred.
Oh, I like it. Very cool. All right. You'll have to make sure to jot that down at some point. Make it into a poem. All right. Up next, we have Lycanthrope by Lawnmower, and it goes like this. Within a stand of trees with dappled light, by the harvest full moon bright, stands naked, feet on the dew-soft grass, a homened with lupus soul and class. The moon that rises in the night changes him in man's true sight, till footpad shod and clothed in fur, he bathes and in the witching hour goes forth to hunt and kill. End poem.
Great read there, Pam. I like the thought. Lawnmower is his name. And this makes for a nice touch to Halloween with a little bit of fun rolled into it. Feet on the dew-soft grass, a hominid with lupus soul and class. The moon that rises in the night changes him in man's true sight. An easy thought of the Halloween monsters and the lycanthropy, so to speak, without the death thought of actually going supremely dark. What about you since you read it?
Well said there, Rex. I have to agree with you that this, I could see like something like this sitting around the fire, drinking spiced apple cider, listening to it, because it has that darkness and that creepiness, but it's not overly dark. It's like, I like that it stands on its own in giving us the description and the backdrop of the werewolf in just a few lines. But I think it also works well as the start of a potentially longer write. You know, like I feel like this is that little taste, and we could easily find out more about these Halloween adventures. So it's a wonderful breath. What's that?
Legends of the Lycanthrope.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, I could definitely, yep, Legend of the Lycanthrope, the Midnight Lycanthrope. There's just all kinds of titles that are potentially available.
Where are we going next?
All right. Up next, we have The Warning by Ia. And we have a recording for that. So, let me mosey on over, and here we go.
Hi, this is Ia, here to read my poem, The Warning. The way my sister tells it, the fellow was cross-country skiing along the trail. Below the ridge, lined with blue and white of first light, when a flock of jays started following him, calling, "Sneak! Sneak!" Thought they were calling him out, announcing his approach, this predator to the animal kingdom, when he looked up and saw a mountain lion sneaking along the ridge.
Great read, EA. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. All right, Pam. This sounds like bear.
Oh, my goodness, right? This sounds like something that we'd be put up with here in the North Woods. I'm looking at the still picture of her video, which it looks like she was walking in the snow. While making the recording, which I think made for wonderful effects, either that or she just used the effects of walking in the snow or something, but it worked really well. And I like this telling of it. Well, first of all, I have to say, I think this is wonderful dark humor because she says, the quote she wrote to was, if we're not meant to have midnight snacks, why is there a light in the fridge? So to turn that quote on its head, that instead of the man, the predator to the animal kingdom going for a midnight snack at the fridge, it's the mountain lion going to the midnight snack, for the midnight snack. That totally cracked me up. And then also when he says, thought they were calling him out, announcing his approach, this predator to the animal kingdom, to me that those few lines there really touch on the idea of how full of themselves humans can be, and which is oftentimes our downfall. So I thought this was an excellent brevity and very well done.
Well, thank you very much. I'll go two ways. Considering I like the thought with the mountain lion, there's a touch of dark humor in that. But I also like it for the other angle, the way my sister tells it. It sounds like a story that gets told around the dinner table when you really need something to smack somebody down and give them a hard time. And then runs this tale of this guy. But meanwhile, the thought with the blue jays, the sneak is her at the top of the stairs here, snake, because she knows the mountain lion with the grumbling belly that's going to the refrigerator at that point in time is her sister. So the idea is to tell a story and make sure it hits on two levels. Yeah, I caught her. She was the sneak thief raiding the fridge after midnight.
I like that. Yeah. We actually, up in this area, there was a few years back, there was this huge mountain lion that people kept reporting. And I never saw it myself. But it was the weirdest thing because people kept reporting this big mountain lion. And the DNR kept saying, nope, can't exist. No way. You know, so I don't know if we just had a whole bunch of drunk people or if the DNR was just trying to deny that there was a big, huge mountain lion running around. Probably the both.
For the most part, they'll stay away unless they can't get anything else, and then they'll take what they can find.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's like any wild animal. I mean, you know. Bears, any one of them.
Well,
you know,
they got to be pretty desperate. Like those two lions in Africa. One of them had a really bad tooth on the canine, and it needed the other lions. But they stayed around humanity, picking off lone people, because the one lion needed the other one to actually do the ripping and tearing so that one could get into the soft meat because it had such a bad tooth, infected and rotten.
Oh, wow. And, yeah, you're right. It's oftentimes desperate situations like that cause them to, be dangerous. And not that I would ever mess with a wild animal, but I know from, living near and in the woods throughout my life that, for the most part, they definitely tend to leave you alone. And so well said there, Rex. All right. Mm-hmm. Up next, we have Frigid Lover by Incubus 2. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Frigid Lover by Incubus 2. And Incubus took the very same prompt. If we're not meant to have midnight snacks, why is there a light in the fridge? Soft light illuminates our private time alone as your cool, whispered breath flows over my heated summer skin. You open up to me, teasing me mercilessly with promises of steak dinners, followed by ripe, fresh strawberries and vanilla ice cream, all washed down by beer, champagne, or wine. You are such a wicked temptress. When you know I am out of diet, you naughty fridge, you.
Great
to be
there, Rex. That was. I really liked that. Yeah, first of all, I mean, even the title was nicely twisted. Frigid Lover. And you knew where it was leading to. Like, you knew it was going to be about the fridge from that very first line. But it still just grabbed and kept your attention just to see how he played with words. And I do like how, you know, there was that personification of the fridge as a lover. And this is great all the way through. But I especially like, and I thought this worked really well because it had that wonderful duality that comes with this kind of playful, fun sensuality. You open up to me, teasing me mercilessly. And then at the end, of course, you are such a wicked temptress when you know I am on a diet, you naughty fridge, you. And what I like about the ending is that has a lot of duality too, because while, you know, he says you naughty fridge, you, it could also be like a girlfriend, a wife, a lover, somebody who enjoys baking or brings you over treats when you are on a diet, or even the idea of perhaps they're trying to give up extramarital affairs or whatever, you know, they're trying to give up, you know, trying to give up the hookers, who knows. I like how it's set up, you know, it's funny, it's sensual, but it's funny sensual, which really brings a smile to my face. I think you did this very well.
Well, the irony in this is there should be a mirror in that fridge because the temptress is yourself. Because why else would you stock up the fridge with steak, strawberries, ice cream, beer, champagne, or wine, and then tell yourself, I can't have none of it because I'm on a diet.
Right?
Where's the greenery? Where's the tomatoes and the lettuce? And let me see what else in there.
Yeah,
the cottage cheese, the fake bacon bits.
There's strawberries.
Nope, can't have the strawberries.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man. I saw this recipe for cream cheese stuffed strawberries that I want to try. It looked really good. But now I'm also hungry for chocolate. I don't know. If the refrigerator is anything like mine, I buy produce with good intention and then forget about it. So.
Until it grows hair?
Yeah, exactly.
That's when you get into the Bundy fridge. Hey, that stuff got hair on it. Man, I'm seeing colors. How long's that been in there?
Right? Or it looks like a science experiment. Exactly. All right. You ready for the next one?
Yeah.
All right. Up next we have Roman Holiday by Eric Shenton, and we do have a recording for that one. So let me find that, and here we go.
Inky Winky Spider, it's in the pruning or in the tuning. Winter vineyard prune ensures summer grape boon. Squeaky guitar string tweak, plectrum plucked melody peaks. Manipulation without intervention. Art imitates life. Pivotal points always rest on fulcrum decision. How much to prune or tune? Big Bang creative spark resides within human DNA. FDA determined to regulate, control presented art aphrodisiac. fundamental urge for co-creation irrepressible. Lightning strike, paintbrush cracks darkness. Prune, tune, even exhume fossilized thought. Deepest delve into subconscious oceans in search of coelacanths. By Jove, daddy long-legged spider holds Lilliputian skyline ransom. World Wide Web controls our darling brave new world, doesn't it? Art goes beyond conspiracy theories. Manipulation without intervention. Prune, tune, exhume, and reinvent. Big Bang DNA spark within wills something new under sun, moon, and stars. Precision's indecision. Pivotal point rests on feelings fulcrum. Intuit, check. Either add or subtract. Brilliant art always evokes gut-wrench emotional response. End poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. But
was that the long poem? It was, wasn't it? It was a totally different poem, wasn't it? I'm sorry. I don't know what happened, but the SoundCloud was greatly appreciated, but since it wasn't the same poem, why don't you go ahead and read Roman Holiday by Eric Svensson, if you don't mind.
All righty.
Roman Holiday by Eric Svensson. Eventide's petulant scowl, followed by midnight prowl. The silent seeker is shrouded by a black velvet cape. Intrusive winter's fog, slobber fragments Venice canal, like a disjointed dreamer, hell-bent on waking from a nightmare. Spectre lampposts come and go, give up the ghost each time the seeker passes. Waterway labyrinth encroaches closer. Eerie green glow from some apartment's jolt sensibility. Follow the labyrinth from Rialto Bridge. Head in an easterly direction. Keep in the shadows. Palazzo will have a red light on the third balcony. Persistent sound of footsteps on slippery cobblestones gains distance behind her. Heavy, hungry footsteps. The seeker slips into a side alley, velvet cloak pulled down tighter, round ruby ringlets. Breath immerses with fog, gray mist ghoul swallowed to soothe nerves. Palazzo will have a red light on the third balcony. Arrive 30 minutes after midnight only. Blurry rats scurry closer, metal-pointed boot lashes out, rodents back off, scuttle back into oily black canal water. Slippery cobblestones slow down, escapes progress. Black plaque winter swoops down lower, 30 minutes after midnight only. Checkered black and white thoughts maze meander, Roman Holiday leads stranger along strange alleys. Come in winter, when Venice sinks deeper into the ocean. Contessa's controlled voice echoed over the line. Bone drenched by insidious forbidding, the seeker continues along the pointillism, misty route. Stucco plaster pockmarks the palazzo on the outside. Garish fawns leer down at her. She recognizes the crest on the archway. Above, to her left, a red light glare. Determined gloved hands lifts the brass skull knocker. The car front door swings open. Sighs heavily as fog tendrils grab inwards. A stoic butler hurriedly ushers her in, bolts the bulletproof door behind them. Prologue to a dream. To end all nightmare screams, sink deeper into your subconscious does in winter. Her canal boats transport bridal couple and office. And both.
Great read there, Rex.
what you got?
All right. Well, first of all, I like the title, Roman Holiday. I believe, if I remember right, that's like the name of a movie or something. But I like that it insinuates the idea of fun. And I thought, you know, the quote he chose was, "Midnight strange mystic hour when the veil between the frail present and the eternal future grows thin." And I really thought he captured that well with some of his lines, like, "Breath immerses with fog, gray mist ghouls, swallows to soothe nerves. Palazzo will have a red light on the third balcony. Arrive 30 minutes after midnight only." And then how it gets slightly darker, it keeps getting darker and darker with blurry rats scurry closer. Black plague, winter swoops down lower, 30 minutes after midnight only. And I like how this goes into the whole idea of how quickly something can change, but like not only that which is around us, but how we view that which is around us, like how as it gets progressively darker, or you know, like the you know at nighttime gets progressively darker, you start to see those shadows and shapes that in the daytime look perfectly innocent. I like how this comes across as a dark tale being told, with the determined gloved hands with the brass skull knocker, the car front door swings open, a very almost like Edgar Allan Poe story feel to it. I like how he brings in the boat, that her canal boat transports bridal couples and coffins. I like how it's got that whole idea of the bodies being brought across the river, but that it's like, you know, I don't know, for me it kind of speaks on the idea of marriage that lasts for eternity, but also to me on the idea of how, you know, love and death are both very profitable for businesses. You know, that if you can appeal to those who are in love and convince them this is what they need to buy, or you can appeal to those, the living, who have just lost, you know, a loved one. So just a really intriguing write. As always, he's got strong imagery and metaphors, and it's very well done.
And a little different for Eric, because it is a story unfolding, and it hits on a number of things. The silent seeker shrouded by a black velvet cape kind of offers up a Jekyll and Hyde thought. But then again, a little further down, he hits on the thought of, where is it? What is it called? Red Ringlets. Kind of hit that note of, what's her name? Red Riding Hood. And the red light. Keeps referring to the red light, the third floor, the red light, and it hits on that note to the red light district, where, hey, you got to find the red light, and that's where you come for the goodies. But it also hits on there's a note to eyes wide shut, something disturbing, while something that you walk into knowing what you're going to get, but not really understanding the full effect until you get into that realm itself. And everything else kind of hits on that notion, the slippery cobblestones, the crawl through the Venice itself, until you get to that one door. It's got a skull locker, skull knocker. And then you're ushered in by a stoic butler, which kind of hits on that notion again, the sort of eyes wide shut and something very, very different. And the last line, "The canal boats transport bridal couples and coffins." Also, a thought to what goes on inside, as well as what might happen if you dispense yourself with offering up a thought to the actuality of the visit, and what might happen if you divulge that visit. Nicely done, Eric.
I like that. And, yeah, the city Venice is set up, has set up red light districts for its prostitutes. So there are definitely in Italy red light districts. So that was and I like how you mentioned the whole idea of, you know, not quite being aware of what getting yourself into, and I know I'm slightly paraphrasing, until you get there. So just a great comment there, Rex. All right.
What will we go next?
All right. Up next, we have Tinking After Midnight by Marriott Dark. And it goes like this. Sometimes I prefer to forget little things out of shape and bent. Some I miss their gist, like the letters I never sent. In my head, I reread them like the ones I didn't burn. I try to read between the lines, but for the smoke and my concern. I did comment about the flood and my lack of self-control, especially in the wee small hours around the midnight of the soul. My story seemed so overlong and the plot line quite intense. It took me years to complete as part of my self-defense. The self-inflicted wounds I had were to some extent evidence of the weaker sort, which is how it often went. I know I'd sometimes linger over the words I try to write, and like an accusing finger, I'd end up tanking after midnight. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I like that sort, tanking after midnight being the ending line. I can hit on that notion of running out of steam while trying to get everything down on paper that you can possibly get to, but all of a sudden it doesn't work and you kind of fail in the moment. And let's see, where is it? Back, let's see, third from the bottom. My story seems so long over and the plot line quite intense. It took me years to complete as part of my self-defense. The self-inflicted wounds I had were, to some extent, evidence of the weaker sort, which is how it often went. And penning out the tale of one's life, but it doesn't quite fit the magic one had intended of it. And that end line hits that notion of, yeah, nothing really good ever happens after midnight, and it ain't happening here. What about you?
I like that, Rex. Well said. You know, and I was thinking as you were commenting, yeah, it does really touch on the whole idea of how oftentimes when all we do is spend our whole life thinking about writing that book about our life, we end up actually not living our life, you know. And this is, I like that this is different for, I think, am I thinking of that for the man? I think I'm different. No, Mary does often write rhyme. I think I was thinking of somebody else. Just a really great write on the whole idea of leaving yourself stuck and not getting out there and having those adventures. I did comment about the flood and my lack of self-control, especially in the wee small hours around the midnight of the soul. I feel like, you know, that I like how that's about, you know, that flood of emotions that often hits us in that midnight of the soul. And it doesn't even have to be specifically midnight as far as on the clock, but the whole idea of when the spirit feels the darkest, when you feel like you struggle the most with your emotions. And, you know, I also really liked my story seemed so overlong and the plot line quite intense. It took me years to complete as part of my self-defense. And I like that he uses the word self-defense because it makes you think if there's something more into this character's story or if it's just simply the idea like we feel like as people we need to justify every choice we make, every, you know, everything we do in our life. We feel like we need some sort of justification for, you know, why we never completed that book, why we never went on that trip, and, you know, all that. So, you know, I thought this was an excellent write and very well done.
All right. Where are we going?
All right. Let me go ahead and grab the next one because I hadn't quite done that yet. And that's right. Just play a little saxophone music there, Rex. All right. Up next, we have Third Eye Why DMT for Free by Eric Daniel Herman. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Third Eye Why DMT for Free by Eric Daniel Herman. The Eye of Horus weeps the remedy rhythmically with the setting sun and rising moon above waves of light and sound shrunk to a spike. Midnight Eye designed in amphibian days filled with rhombohedron electric crystals pinned at the cross points on the golden piece. Sleeping Eye stacked with carbonate minerals which paved the geomagnetic maps lining the skies of homing pigeon flight. Midnight Owl peels the lid wide open. The treasure found at the summit of the silver-lined Kundalini spinal ladder. In Dreams Kingdom atop the pinnacle of Joseph's golden stairway to heaven, mechanical elves dance to shaman drums. In the deepest ocean of sleep, with the all-seeing Eye of Horus awake, doors are unhinged and laws of time and space erased.
I really like this. I thought it had wonderful use of imagery and language. And he wrote to the prompt, anything is possible after midnight. And I like his information that he put in the AN about the pineal gland when fully activated, such as dream state or heightened consciousness as a crystalline superconductor. I thought that I always find when people put extra information in their ANs like that, it's really intriguing, and I think it adds to the depth of the poem. I don't think every little thing needs to be put in AN, but, when stuff like something is, it's really cool. I really liked how he filled with rhombohedron electric crystals, like the use of that, the shape, particular shape, really just makes it very vivid in your mind. Like you can kind of see it. If I remember right now, that's a type of flower, isn't it? The rhombohedron?
Nope. It's a a configuration.
Okay. Okay.
How many,
all right. I was thinking of something different. For some reason, I was picturing one of those like big puffy flowers. But, okay, well, that makes sense. That makes sense. So it has kind of that element of mathematics in it, which, there's the idea that mathematics connects everything in the world. And there's a kind of a I won't want to say magic, but a kind of a, there is a magical element to mathematics and numbers. I really like lining up, Sleeping Eye stacked with the carbonate minerals, which paved the geomagnetic maps, lining the skies of honing pigeon flight. Honing pigeon flight was a really great way to describe how our sleeping mind connects to something in distance. Like it feels like that whole idea of when you travel outside of your body when you're sleeping. I also like that he brought up Joseph's Golden Stairway to Heaven, the shaman drums, and the all-seeing Eye of Horus awake. There was a really great idea of the spirituality and the being open to the spirit realm that we don't see when we're busy with our awakened mind, which is focused on so much else that we don't have time to like really open ourselves up to what is beyond the everyday. So just a really strong write and very well done.
Well said. All right. rhombohedron. Think of honeycomb. Take an individual cell. That would be a rhombohedron. Six sides. All lines are equal length. Yes, no? Okay.
No, I didn't realize I was supposed to respond. I was just listening to you. So, yes, I can.
Although this walk along the lines of sleep, it came from Larry. This goes a little bit deeper. It hits on the thought of using LSD as that pointed note to opening up the pineal and the third eye view to that which is spanning the inner mind and opening up to the furtherance of self and mentally capable of. Now the thought with the electric crystals and the point of the golden seed is reaching that noted arena where anything seems possible, and the Kundalini spinal line hits on that notion of purification and spiritual note as well. The golden stairway was a nice touch. Mechanical elves danced to shaman drums. That kind of brings in, you think of Morrison doing his little dance on stage when he's got it going on. But the thought of unhinged laws of time and space, it does seem once the mind is fully open up to the possibility, all and everything seems to run in a nice line of thought where everything comes together, what spiritually as well as temporally within the mind's eye. And the idea is to open up that little, because it seems as we grow older, the pineal gland gets a little harder, a little firmer, like a pine nut. And the idea is to break that foundation. So all those things we've lost over the eons that we once could do, they're supposed to be locked up somewhere within that realm. And the idea is to unlock it by opening up that pineal gland once more.
I like that. Yeah, well, and I like what you had to say about how, you know, becoming more susceptible. I also like that you brought up Jim Morrison. I think if Eric here wrote for your Jim Morrison contest, he'll probably turn out something really good. And I also figured out why it was, as you were describing that shape to me, why it just all of a sudden clicked and sounded really familiar. And that is because it's a shape used in many quilting patterns. But nothing to do with the poem, just a little something that, I thought of. I really hope that if he hasn't, that if Eric hasn't written for the Jim Morrison show, that he can considers it, because I think he could do really good with that. It'd be interesting to see what he comes up with. And
all right, what we got, and the flower you're thinking of, as Manuel says, is a rhododendron.
Yes. I had a neighbor that used to have those. So I was somewhat close. There's an R, an H, and a G, and an R in there. as I said, somewhat close. All right, and now we're going to try to get our SoundCloud done. Up next we have Blue on Black by Sapphire Rose. And here we go.
Blue on Black by Sapphire Rose. The rain pitter-patters around me, each gravity-driven drop soaking me. My clothing losing the war to protect. Brisk winds penetrate me to my very soul. Unseen in the dark, tears blend with the rain. The night threatening with thunderheads and lightning. The rain beats down without pity for passers-by. the aura of a headlight in the near distance captures the murkiness of the midnight hour. The crickets have silenced, lightning bugs nowhere to be found. Nature's orchestra fades under the uncertainty of night. The rain is much more intense now, and as the storm bleeds into the tapestry of black, I step back from the rain-soaked street. A brick wall shelters me, an echoing boom that crescendos through the dark. I know the burdens of anxiety and the drama it brings, which morphed into altered realities of blue on black. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Sapphire. Thank you very much. For the SoundCloud, it is greatly appreciated. Well, it's kind of waits for that last thought to roll in anxiety, altered realities of blue on black. And that is a nice touch of blue on black, this emotive thought to the bruising of life itself, because this walks around that notion of pain and hurt because of the anxious note of the rain itself, the lightning, the thunderheads, and the need for shelter, stepping back from the rain-soaked street, a brick wall shelter is needed. It's on the note of feels in the moment, and it's definitely as bleak and dreary as the visual itself, which was nicely done. What about you?
Yeah, I think I really like when you said bleak and dreary was the perfect way to describe the ambiance of this poem, which she does create really well. And I have to say kudos because she went with the quote, "Midnight blue is the only color that can ever compete with black" by Christian Dior, which, you know, I could easily have seen somebody bringing into kind of, a write about a fashion model or whatever, you know. But she took it to that idea of how the black of nighttime brings on the blues, brings on the anxiety, brings on the depression. And so the fact that she took that in a different direction, I found to be really impressive. The imagery here is strong. You know, the use of sound, like the crickets, you know, or lack of sound, I should say. The crickets have silence, lightning bugs nowhere to be found, nature orchestra fades under the uncertainty of night. What is it that they always say? Like, I feel like this is that kind of that warning. Like, if nature all of a sudden starts, like the birds, the insects, all start making too much noise, they need more noise than they usually do, beware. If they quiet, beware. Oftentimes it is nature that first hears the danger coming. I also really like that the rain is much more intense now as the storm bleeds and is in a tapestry of black. I step back from the rain-soaked street. A brick wall shelters me. And you're right, that does have that whole feel of as if they are trying to take shelter from the rain, but they really don't have anywhere to go. It's that whole idea of being scared, of not really knowing what the future brings. So just a really strong write and very well done. And I suppose you'd like to know what's next.
That'd be nice. So,
yeah. All right. Up next we have Monsters Mashed by Weaver of Dreams. And
nice picture.
Here we go.
I opened the sails at midnight, as I usually did. There is no need to fly in the face of tradition. I asked, "Is there a spirit who wishes to talk to us?" Hoping for one who wasn't too old or in perdition. No luck, I'm afraid, as the planchette slowly moved around all the letters and spelt out the name Pat. Holding back a sigh, I said to the spirit brightly, "Do you wish to ask a question about your little cat?" slowly patched out the words, "Not right now, kiddo. I'm here on a fact-finding mission of a totally different kind. I have a message to give to John, who is sitting to your left. It is not what it seems. There is something it's trying to find." John jumped up, looking as if he'd been electrocuted, shouted angrily, "Come on, let's have it out, face to face. What's this message?" he snarled, and we read Pat's reply. "You want the Book of Shadows that was left to Grace." "What's this about Gran's book?" an outraged Grace inquired. John began to melt and turn into a monster right before our eyes. Pat spelled out, "Gran says turn to page 13, read it out loud." Grace did, John included, which took him and us by surprise. If there is a moral to this story, which I find there usually is, it is probably keep your Gran's Book of Shadows out of sight. If it's known to be around, there will be those nefarious demons who will look for it. So lock all doors and stay at home at night.
Wonderful read there, Weaver. Thank you very much for the sound clap. We greatly appreciate it. All right, Pam.
Weaver has such a wonderful storytelling voice. You know, no matter what kind of poem she's reading, she sounds great. But when she tells these story-style ones, it's like I just want to be next to a campfire, you know, listening to her tell stories, you know. And I think all good stories start with a first-person narrative, the I opened the seance at midnight as I usually did. There's no need to fly in the face of tradition. You know, like right away, she brings you into the picture, into the idea that, ooh, you know, what is going to happen here? And I like the back and forth, the conversation, but, you know, which was became part of the story, but didn't interrupt the flow of the story. And I like that it's focused on this book of shadows. What's this about Gran's book? An outraged Grace inquired. John began to melt and turn into a monster right before our eyes. Now that sounds like a freaking acid trip, you know? Wow. And then I like how she brings us to that line of, if there is a moral to the story, which I find there usually is probably keep your Gran's book of shadows out of sight. That line there, wonderful dark humor. You know, I like how she acknowledges that, you know, there might be a moral, because there usually is, but I'm not sure. And if it is, it's just simply this. If your grandmother has a book of shadows, don't bring it out. You know, this is just, it was dark, and it was clever, and it was fun, and it was very well done.
Yes, and that moral is supposed to teach you, hey, you're not supposed to get into this shit. Like, let's see, let's start with the seance. That kicks it right off. And the sort of, oh, is there a spirit that's talking to us? Then the planchet. Ah, that speaks of the Ouija board. So you've got a second role running in this. And then the demon is dressed up as a person, and the Book of Shadows, that's the book where all the rituals and spells to be cast from neo-pagan text is writ. And you know what? Maybe the thought is, yeah, shouldn't be digging into shit you don't know nothing about.
Absolutely. Yep. Proceed with caution. Yep. Well said there, Rex. All right. And up next we have to do our last SoundCloud for the night, and then we'll move on to other rites. Midnight Has Broken Its Silence by I Love Poems, otherwise known as Sawa. And here we go.
I Love Poems. Midnight has broken its silence. Nuit a rompu son silence. The tears of a star taking refuge in the darkness of a deserted night. They felt somber sadness while a gentle wind rustling. The silence touched sleepless eyes and awakened the beat of her fragile heart to breathe love. Les larmes d'une étoile en prenant refuge dans la noirceur de nuit désertée ont ressenti de la tristesse tandis qu'un vent bruissant le silence a effleuré des yeux dans le sommeil se défilait et a veillé le battement de son cœur fragile pour respirer l'amour and the form.
Great read, Salma. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, what you got?
Yeah, absolutely. A beautiful brevity, as always. Wonderful imagery. I really like that she starts out with the tears of a star take refuge in the darkness. And I like how that works as a metaphor for the whole idea of not just talking about a star itself, but rather, you know, a person who has potential, maybe even someone who is famous or someone who puts out that bright personality during the daytime, but at night finds themselves, you know, wrapped up in the sadness that they hide from everybody else. A gentle wind rustling the silence touched sleepless eyes and awaken the beat of her. I mean, this is one of the difficult to separate parts. It's wonderful all the way through, but I really like that line, awakened the beat of her. Like the whole idea of somebody realizing their full potential, of realizing that there is the magic to inside themselves. So beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. But opening up, it's on loneliness, a gentle wind rustling the silence. And that bursts the notion of there's got to be something better. Sleepless eyes. Noting the sadness there and awakening the beat of our fragile heart to breathe love. Is awakening past the essence of long-felt, deep-seated pain that lingered long past its due date.
I like that. Well said there, Rex. All right. Up next we have Her Dream Stretch from Midnight Till Dawn by Mamia, and it goes like this. She stands in the corner under the wan light of a street lamp, waiting for a hustle to pass by. The cold air makes her breath plume as she runs her hands again in her jacket for what paltry warmth she could get. Headlights approach the side of the road, and a man reaches over the passenger door. She looks in with her winning smile. He has been seeing her for the past couple of months now, entranced, always waiting for the weekend to come. He opens the car door for her, and she sits beside him, reaching for his groin. Not here, not now, not yet. He drives a couple of blocks to an all-night motel. He wants her all to himself. She tries not to dream as they move in the dark, not to dream of picket fences and small white houses with spacious lawns. Her erection is painful. She savors it as it moves with her. She moans. Still, the dreams persist before her eyes, and all of a sudden she hears the taboo, three words from witch's lips that cannot be true, by passion or by lust. He just said, I love you. He is surprised as she moved away from him, covering herself with the blankets he stained, his own engorgement, hurting him in confusion. He tries to calm her down and explain, trying to collect his thoughts and be plain. What he said was true. He had fallen and in pain. He wants to take her in, protect her from the streets that have abused her, but only if she wants to come freely. Tears fall from honey-colored eyes. Kisses fly and cover his face. Her heart soars higher than this place. Maybe her dreams can come true. Maybe it's something she really can pursue. Maybe, maybe, maybe it's all coming through. She held him close, basking in his warmth as he kisses her softly on the forehead. Tomorrow cannot wait long enough. This midnight stretches till dawn. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And thank you very much, ma'am. Yeah, that was different, especially with the prompt. Anything is possible after midnight. And it kind of hits on, well, it offers up the first couple of normal street trade, so to speak, and that which goes on. But then it takes a little bit of a turn. And by the time you get to the end, you're wondering, is this but a dream because of the title itself? A dream stretched from midnight until dawn. Is this the dream that still stands on the street corner, basking in the moment? Or is this actuality? So it kind of bends on the notion of you get to a two-in-one thought to what is going on in her mind and what is going on in the moment. How about you?
Yeah, I like how you brought that up because I had the same feeling, the idea that it could easily... Well, and the other, I think, what I get from it is I think it's based on a story that's it's supposed to be the reality, but I do also see how it has an idea of perhaps being a dream, and perhaps it's not that she's standing on the street corner anymore. Maybe she is actually in that hotel room having sex, staining those sheets, but in her mind, as she's going through, feeling like a used object, her mind is taking her away to that dream, to that fantasy, away from feeling used, of feeling like an object, so I think the great thing about this story is it has those layered potentials. It has that potential that it's that fairy tale come true. It has that potential that it's simply, that it is the escapism of someone who the only way they can escape is through their fantasies. I thought this had a really great, like, raw, edgy feel to it. And it's beautifully written and very well done.
Well said. All right.
All right. The next one, we're going to go a little bit off topic, but not really. It wasn't written for this show, but Poeta DeCabra put it on the board, and it's a write for National Women's Day, which happens to be March 8th. And so this is Her Foundation by Poeta DeCabra. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Her Foundations by Poeta DeCabra. Very successful men would be no more than zeros without mothers and wives, the unsung heroes. Dad built the house, but not alone. It was dear old Mum who made it home. For all the brilliance amongst all nations, we must thank our mothers for laying the foundation. And poem.
Great
well,
read
Poeta.
There, Rex.
Not his usual fare of irony with some twisted humor rolling through it.
You're absolutely right. It isn't his usual fare. It's, usually, as you said, Poeta does great with offering up humor and irony and oftentimes, having fun with the sensuality. Here we get to see a different side. A side we get to see is, I'm sure, a side of him that he's shown often, which is the idea, of somebody who understands that we all come from a mother, we all come from, a woman, and that they are the foundation. And I like that he starts out, that was a great brevity all the way through, but, very successful men would be no more than zeros without mothers and wives, the unsung heroes. And then, of course, the end, we must thank our mothers for laying the foundation. And laying the foundations isn't just about that your mother gave birth to you, but whether it's your birth mother or somebody who acts as a mother figure for you, there's oftentimes a woman in your life who through her examples of her actions and her words set the example of the type of person you should be. I did also want to mention, if Poeta is still listening, that while the contest is closed, I do have a topic board up for tonight's Twisted Tuesday show, Twisted Tuesday, seven Women of Art, which I ran for Women's Day, National Women's Day. So, you might want to put a poem on there. It doesn't have to be the same poem. We're actually, I don't mean to self-publicize here or whatever the word is, but, if he's interested in writing something or providing a write inspired by a woman artist, he's of course is more than welcome to do that.
Well, he's still on the board,
yeah.
So he might just do it.
Oh, there
see?
You go.
I will take a look.
Awesome. Very cool. Awesome. All right. Well, yeah, I really enjoy this, and I think it's wonderful to get a head start. I don't think we needed to wait till 10 p.m. tonight. I think it's great to get an early morning head start on celebrating women. So I thought very well done.
What? Where are you going to take us next?
Oh, you weren't going to comment?
No, I didn't. I thought I did.
Nah, not really.
Nah, but you covered it all, unfortunately. I ain't got nothing else left to say except it is, actually, it's nice to see something different, something off the beaten path of his normal right, which I do thoroughly enjoy because they're always got a little bit of a twist in them. This is more straightforward, and it does offer up that thought. You know what? Everybody ought to stand up and tell those assholes who want to delete Mother's Day for Birthday's Day or anything else, tell them to bugger off. A mother is a mother is a mother, and you can't take that away unless you're a bloody test tube thing. So in that case, you're not real.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. Great comment. All right. Up next, we have Between the First Chime and the Eternal Reckoning by Orange Sage. And it goes like this. On the first chime of midnight, step upon the golden dais. Hold your body up scissor sharp, yet graceful as a white and softly carved wild night flowering orchid. Take a fold of midnight's sacred veil and wrap yourself in its irradiant fusion. At the eighth chime, inhale the moon's full-bodied essence. Taste the brittle and burning crust of a sacrificial star. And when the twelfth and loudest chime resounds through all earthly reason, stare into your own eyes trembling, terror-gripped beauty. Take a second to realize you only have a frac second to make a decision, for you are at the slippery edge of your fragile self. And poem.
Oh, great read there, Anne. Thank you very much. Yeah. That opening stanza kind of paints the thought of what is coming. Then you hit on the graceful as white and softly carved while that flowering orchid is a blossoming there. And the sacred kind of offers up the thought of maybe there's a sacrifice coming. The eighth bell and then the twelfth bell finally chimes. And that decision is, do you walk over that slippery edge? Because something bad is really coming hard at you at the moment, and you might end up walking into oblivion permanently. What about you?
Yeah, I really like how, as you mentioned, that you mentioned that the first stanza sets the tone. Hold your body up, scissor sharp. Like scissor sharp reminds me of being all of a sudden like tense with that full alert because you heard that sound. Like maybe not necessarily sound, but you know how sometimes you just wake up in the middle of the night and you just don't quite know what it was that woke you up. And she wrote to the quote, midnight strange mystic hour when the veil between the frail present and the eternal future grows thin. I always enjoy Orange Sage's writing. She has a way of allowing her stanzas to shape and form themselves almost, you know. And I like how it says, inhale the moon's full-bodied essence, taste the brittle and burning crust of a sacrificial altar. Like, I like how she describes it as almost like taking time to take a sip of, or you know, of a drink of wine, you know, almost the idea of preparing one's palate for what's coming forth. And I like how dark that last stanza gets when you realize you only have a fraction of a second, not even a full second. Like it's basically impossible to make a coherent decision before all of a sudden slipping into that world of nightmares and broken dreams and nervous breakdowns. So just excellent write and very well done.
Alrighty, where are we going next?
All right. Up next, we have... I hope I can sleep by S. Sharp, and go ahead and give that a read for us, Rex.
Hope Sleeps Through the Morning by S. Sharp. Telephone lines span distances between midnight and morning, and all parts of the day. Tragedies call midnight. Fearing disconnection, hope sleeps through the morning. The power lines charge the senses, encoded messages mystify the void. Midnight, fears, blackouts in darkness, eyes open, hope sleeps through the morning. The faithful clock at midnight freezes, entrenched, hands clapping, not in applause. Alone, absent movement, hope sleeps through the morning. And poem, what you got?
Well, great read there, Rex. I really like this. The power lines change the senses, encoded messages mystifying the void. Midnight fears black out in darkness, eyes open, hope sleeps through the morning. I like how those lines work really well metaphorically for the idea of how the mind and the way we view things and our thoughts change as we keep going without sleep. I also really like hands clapping, not in applause, alone, absent movement, hope sleeps through the morning. I thought, well, that whole stanza there was just a wonderful way to describe the intensity of the clicking clock. You know, which you wouldn't notice if you were sound asleep, but becomes like that like dripping water, ticking clocks, all those little sounds that you just suddenly pick up on because your mind won't shut down. So just a really great write and very well done.
Well, thank you. It does hit on the thought of death in itself in the morning. The repetitive thought, hope sleeps through the morning, hits on almost three different lines. Paralyzed, charged, sense, and could have missed this by the void. There's the thought of the brain right there. Midnight, fierce blackouts and darkness, eyes open, hope sleeps through the morning. That kind of hits on the notion of death right there in the moment with just a blank stare on your face. And the back end, the last one, hits on death. It's what somebody would clap to see if you're actually still with us in the moment, so to speak. Alone, absent movement, hope sleeps through the morning. Kind of hits on a mortuary scene.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that, that whole idea. It would often, I think, be difficult. I mean, I'm sure people learn how to do it, like people who work for a mortuary, you know, but, you know, learn how to put themselves asleep. But sometimes you think being around all that death might affect you. Great observations there.
You'd be surprised what they get into.
Yeah, right. There you go. All right. Up next, we have Midnight is a Monster by Diane D. And it goes like this. In wide open spectra of nothing, midnight sits in ebony's crevices, scattering stars across the moon like a thousand spiders' eyeballs. Midnight retires in the same way a child throws a temper tantrum, or like Yosemite Sam when he's got a stubborn donkey on a rope. The duration of midnight's reality, the realm of midnight's dominion, the only purpose to say his name is 1 second out of 86,400 seconds a day. Yet midnight blue is the only color that can ever compete with black. But for just 1 second out of 24 hours and invisible to time's naked eye, midnight is a thorn without a rose, a reminder to turn back the clock, and is midnight with a lowercase m, merely a second without its minuet, without its minute. So am I prejudiced against midnight? No, that's what Patrick Ness said. That's when the monsters come out, with no indication if they go back in. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I like that opening stanza. That's a nice way to look at the midnight sky and stars in it like a thousand spiders' eyeballs. Nice touch. I like the humor of the second stanza with the child throwing a temper tantrum, or like Yosemite Sam when he's got a stubborn donkey on a rope. Nice touch with that. Also the 86,400 seconds in a day. And then just pick one out of 24 hours, and it's a blink, a moment that passes so effortlessly that you don't even notice it's gone. And then at midnight is a thorn without a rose, a reminder to turn back the clock, and it's midnight with a lowercase m, nearly a second without its minute. Nice kind of question there. And the back end offering up the author of the quote as the finishing touch. A little dark and eerie, but not too much. I like it. What about you?
I like it, too. I actually have to delete the comment that I accidentally put on it because we were reading a poem of hers the other day or night. It had all W's in it, basically, like all W alliteration. So I put this poem on it, and it was like, oops, wrong, this comment on it. It was like, oops, wrong poem. Don't ask me how that happened. It was just very confusing. But I like how wonderful imagery in here. And I like how she bounces back and forth. Like, first of all, she has the creepy imagery of scattering stars across the moon like a thousand spiders' eyeballs. That is wonderful, imaginative and creepy imagery. But then she goes into, like Yosemite Sam, he's got a stubborn donkey on a rope, and you can just picture it. I mean, and that is just a wonderful nod to humor. And I do like that she brought in the quote at the end and said, you know, do I, you know, what do I think of midnight? You know, is midnight just simply a mere second within a minute? Is, you know, is it simply just the passing of time, or is it more? And I like how she mentions at the end, that said that when midnight is when the monsters come out, with no indication if they go back in. So it's that fear that when you're in the middle of the night and you're facing your personal demons, that you wonder, you know, are they going to disappear when daylight comes, or will they continue to just be a part of you? So I thought this was an excellent write and very well done. And up next we have Yes by R.E. Ray. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Yes by R.E.A. You spoke with a quick callback. Your early arrival in that V-cut black dress and those signature red bottom pumps. High class at the low rent barbecue joint, and how close you sat next to me. After briefly excusing yourself to do whatever in the ladies' room, then your offer to taste the peppery meat, your fork at my bottom lip, and your long look when I picked up the bottle and poured the last purple drop of muscadine wine into your half-full glass. I felt the warmth of your thigh against mine. Your palm clutched my knee when I told you that irreverent joke, and you still laughed. You said nothing on the night drive along the Silver Lake shore. You sang every Patsy Cline song perfectly into my eyes. There was no, not even a maybe when we parked at the far end of the pier. Your bare feet on my truck's buckskin dash, the full moon in your eyes. Yes, I said, when you asked if I might like to kiss you. And poem. And that was done to Anything Is Possible After Midnight by Timothy Leary. What you got?
Well, first of all, I really like R.E. Ray's poetry, and I was happy to see that he wrote for the contest and the show. I like how this is romantic, but it's a down earth romantic, and I like how it has that feel of taking a chance on love, I like that there's this attention to detail, like, then you offer to taste the peppery pink meat, your fork and my bottom lip, and your long look when I picked up the bottle and poured the last purple drop of muscadine wine into your half-full glass. You can just feel the interaction. And I like that it's not just about, you know, the touching, like the palm clutch on the knee, but, you know, the laughing at the irreverent jokes, the singing of the Patsy Cline songs. Like, there's these moments of love and connection that come with sharing songs and laughter. So, like I said, it has a real down-to-earth feel. Well, you know, like, you know, even though it's into the idea that anything is possible after midnight, and you know, it's often that kind of, you know, that kind of quote inspires, like, dreamy type rites. And there's a dreamy, like, quality to this, but it's that quality of a dream that has potential to be true, you know, and because there is a element of many elements of reality, you know, bare feet on my truck's buckskin dash, and I like the imagery of the full moon in your eyes. I thought this was beautifully written and very well done.
I see that. Just a bit walk back in time, kind of 50s, because you got that Patsy Cline note down at the bottom of the piece itself. And almost hits on those notes to Hallmark cards or Hallmark cards? Yeah. Something that drips with a little bit of sweetness to it. Anyway, storyline is really good. I mean, the thought with a quick callback and early arrival in a V-cut black dress and those signature red bottom pumps. High class with the low red bottom. He's like, got a little bit of humor in that, considering they're going out for barbecue, and she comes in a V-cut black dress and red bottom pumps shoes. Okay. And then, again, a little bit of humor to do whatever in the ladies' room. And then the thought was, there's nice touch to detail, the peppery pink meat, and sitting at his bottom lip. And then the thought of the draw to the pouring of the wine. And then from then on down, it's been almost a quiet moment. You said nothing on the night drive along the Silver Lake Shore. You sang every Patsy Cline song along perfectly into my eyes. So it does that note of a 50s heading out to that that parking spot, the lover's lane, so to speak.
I like that. And you're right. There was some nice touches of humor in there, especially the whole idea of, you know, the mysterious things that women go to the bathroom for. You know, and it did have that feel, as you said, of going back in time. So great comment there, Rex. And up next, we have Celestial, A Hidden Gem and a Name by Time Teller. And it goes like this. There's a guilt that travels carriageways through gray matter, infested with amyloid plagues and tau tangles after midnight. Arrhythmia knocks the ribcage as if God was torturing Eve, right form out of him. Conscipient is the wind that cat-like teases these old mansion beams with a stalker's intention to force its way in. Oh, crow, leave him be to dine alone upon the feast of his affliction, to scourge the flats and rifes of memories that drain the flesh white. Beseech these ocular dreams to recede from his shores of whiskey-scented breath as the ticking of the clock gets slower after 12. And as the dawn rises, its yellow harshness whips him awake in his chair. The ticking has become faster. Where are you now, crow? As the magpie beats the lead on the window, night is facing forward. He is alone, wanting to hear you caw and rest at his table. Tell him the journey is a good one. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I like this. A nice tease through a little of Poe with thoughts. I like that. That second two line, the first two line thought, concupiscent is the wind that cat-like teases these old mansion's beams with a stalker's intention to force its way in. Nice line. Then the next one down too. Oh, crow, leave him be to dine alone upon the feast of his afflictions, to scourge the flats and rifes of memories that drain the flesh white. Tell him the journey is a good one. And nice finish. Well worth the thought of digging into a bit of Poe and running it in a different thought. What about you?
I have to agree with you. I liked how you mentioned that it had a bit of a Poe feel, and I thought the same thing. But I like that it has a Poe feel, but doesn't feel like a copy. Like it's in his own unique style, Time Teller's own unique style, his own unique voice. And I like how he switches from the crow to the magpie. He switches from the messenger of death, the messenger of dreams, to the magpie, that bright, cheerful morning bird that greets the sun, you know. And so I thought that transition there made for a great way to describe the transition of going from night, from those midnight thoughts to those daytime thoughts. I really liked where he said, beseech these ocular dreams to recede from his shore of whiskey-scented breath as the ticking of the clock gets slower after 12. I really like how in there, I mean, within these lines are some beautifully written classical language. And it's so modern day relatable, and the idea of someone whose, you know, dreams, whose memories drive them to drink just so that they can go into a really deep sleep. You know, and so just a really great write all the way through and very well done.
All right, where are we going next?
All right, oops, haven't grabbed the next one. Let me go ahead and erase that, and I'll go grab the next one. All right, and where are we at? Here we go. All right. And up next we have Woe of Her Why by Rironi 664. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Woe of Her Why by Rironi 664. Dark curtains drawn just like on her face, pleading to fall asleep in her place. Cold grips of guilt plaguing her sleepless nights. Fighting, thrashing face turned white. Shivering and shaking in her sheets, depressed in dark waters drenched in defeat, lacrimal waterfall spilling in a sea of sadness, mania burning the midnight oil, machinations of madness, clutching her chest, getting harder to breathe, blazing eyes, the pain of scarlet letter that won't leave, in her sight such a fright, blinded by bright light of lie, windows shattered glass, in the woe of her why, and phone.
Read there, Rex. And, yeah, I like the title, Woe of Her Why, because I think, as I often say, that why is one of the most difficult questions to answer. And when you've lost someone or something that was important to you, when life hits you hard, it's often those why questions that can't be answered that bring the most sadness. I thought the imagery when this was powerful and emotive. You know, I really like shivering and shaking in her sheets, depressed in dark waters, drenched in defeat, mania burning, the midnight oil machination of madness. I like how this has this whole idea of, you know, kind of like makes me think of bipolar disorder. And I also really like the blazing eyes, that the pain, a scarlet letter that won't leave, and her sights to fright, blinded by the bright light of lie. The mention of the scarlet letter makes me think of you know, betrayal, or, you know, have someone, you know, having an affair. But it also, there's something within those imagery, like the fright, blinded by bright light of lie, that makes me almost think of like a migraine. You know, there's something about that imagery that makes me think of the whole idea of the effects of having a migraine. But I found this an emotive piece that was very relatable in the idea of that overwhelming sadness that comes to you at midnight. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, that overwhelming sadness is of her own making, because you get guilt in that first sense. And then you get the double whammy in the last one with the scarlet letter and the lie, blinded by bright light of lie, popping up with the thought with the guilt and the scarlet letter. She done something wrong, and she's paying a heavy price for it because it's keeping her up at night.
That is a really great observation there. And, yeah, there is the, you know, the like you said, the idea of realizing that, yeah, because it says cold grips of guilt plaguing her sleepless night. So, and that is true, because, you know, once you hurt somebody, you know, it's on your own head to the guilt that you feel, that the betrayal from the betrayal that you caused. So, great observation there, Rex. And let's go ahead and fit in one last shorty for the night, and the rest will be carried over, not to next week, because next week we're doing Jim Morrison, but to the 22nd. And our last poem for the night is Midnight Mist by Joan Rooney, and it goes like this. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow all converge at the one mystic hour. Raggedy remnants of yesterday mingle with the grains of sand in the newly spun hourglass of tomorrow. Fast fading memories at the edge of our still conscious reality dim and converge with the mounting hopes for the new day slowly emerging. Our past pain lessens and our wishes soar into our somnolent conscience. End poem.
Great read there, Pam. That's an easy thought to the where everything converges in a single moment and anything is possible at that point. But it also hits on the notion of renewal, that which comes with a new day, the promise of that new because what was yesterday and what was today is now but a reminder of that which is now, because tomorrow has birthed itself once more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I really like how she wrote this in one block, because I feel like by writing it in, I felt like that the way she chose to put the form worked well with connecting the past, the present, and the future together. And I have to agree with you. There is that wonderful idea of renewal, of refreshment, of moving forward to a new day. I also like raggedy remnants of yesterday mingle with the grains of sand in the newly spun hourglass of tomorrow. Newly spun hourglass really gives a sense of hope. So beautifully written and very well done. And great show tonight, Rex.
Yep, was. Thank you very much. And thank you, Rick, Jeremy, Poeta, and Manuel for the board. It's nice having you out there. And do it again next week with Morris and Lines, and we'll have some fun.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Man. Have a good night.
And have some fun. Sleep tight.